हाथ अघोर योगा, अघोर इज रियली अ स्टेट ऑफ बीइंग. व्हेन यू आर एस्टैब्लिश्ड इन योर होलनेस, यू आर एस्टैब्लिश्ड इन अघोर. When we are aspiring to go somewhere, we walk on a path. When you are aspiring to get established in a ghor, you walk on a path. So it becomes a ghor path. Then the path becomes a tradition. So you may hear a ghor tradition, but really it is a state of being. We call it a ghor yoga path. So whatever route we take, whatever methods we use, becomes a ghor path. The roots of a ghor path are deeply rooted in mystical tradition of India. In our tradition, now I'm going to use the word tradition because many have walked on this path and there has been a continuum of the practices and methods over time, and it has become a lineage, a tradition. But the state of being that we are trying to aspire for is the aghor state of being, that you are established in your wholeness. And that is our true nature, really. That is our true nature. We are whole, we are complete unto ourselves. When we are not connected with our wholeness, then we experience fear, doubt, anger, hatred, jealousy. All those tendencies surface. The more we align with our aghor state of being, easier it becomes to free ourselves from those tendencies. How do we align with our wholeness? Any concise effort that we make to connect with our wholeness is called sadhana, a spiritual practice. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as you make very concrete effort. Left to our own devices, we end up digging many potholes. We take on a practice, then the doubt comes, the fear comes, a better option comes, You remember those four nooses of the mind? Sam, Dham, Dand, Bhed. We fall prey to these four nooses of the mind. We start a practice, the first thing will come. It's not a big deal. That's Sam. Second noose is Dham, a better option. Third noose, Dand, fear. The fourth noose, separation. I'm different. I'm special. It's not for me. It's for somebody else. So when left to our own devices, we fall prey to these four nooses of the mind and end up digging many potholes. That's where the guru comes in. The very definition of the word guru is remover of doubt. When doubt is removed, we begin to walk on a path we reach our destination. Now the word guru is really misunderstood here. People think guru is a person. But the real guru is your own inner higher self. That is the guru. Devotion to the guru means I'm really devoted to my higher self. I'm really devoted to my aghor self. There is no compromise in my devotion. Sometimes it's a real sacrifice to be a devotee. If you are devoted to your higher self, you find yourself making many sacrifices all the time. What is sacrificed first? Our own ego. It's our own ego that keeps separating us from our higher self. Somebody says something to you, you feel hurt. You are hurt because you are not established in your higher self, in your aghor self. If you are established in your aghor self, in your higher self, you are able to diffuse that. You are able to take a step back, acknowledge your wholeness, and recognize that whatever has been offered to you, you're not going to accept it. So it's our ego that feels hurt. If I'm devoted to my guru, if I'm devoted to my higher self, I'm able to take a step back and save myself from feeling hurt. The wholeness, the aghor self, is what we do in prayer every day. Just like we got up and we did the arati, Brahmanandam paramasukhadam kevalam jnanamurtim dvandatitam gaganasadrisham tatvamasyadilaksham. This meaning of this is you're really praying, you're singing that hymn to your guru, your higher self, Brahmanandam, the eternal divine bliss, paramasukhadam, that happiness, kevalam jnanamurtim, only established in the knowledge, dvandatitam, one who is beyond doubt, gaganasadrisham, which is ever expansive like the sky, tattvamasyadi laksham, one who sees everything in its essence, ekam nityam, which is eternally the same, vimalam, pure, achalam, immovable, sarvadhi sakshibhutam, that which sees everything as a witness, bhavatitam, which is beyond any feelings. It's not like it doesn't feel, it's beyond that. It doesn't get caught up in feelings. Triguna rahitam, void of the three gunas, that this is good, this is bad, this is higher, this is lower, this is pure, this is impure. Triguna rahitam, sadgurum tam namami, oh sadguru, I bow to you. So these are all the qualities in you. That's the one you are remembering when you were singing that hymn after meditation. You're really remembering your own higher self. So that's one guru, our inner guru. It's a nice concept, nice idea. We are human beings, we forget. Then, the seers, the rishis, found another method. Well, you forget, then you have to find someone who could remind you of that, in a person. So that person, we choose someone in our society, in our community, you know, or whoever we know. Yeah, this person. You establish the seat of the guru in a person. And that person becomes your guru. Again, the same thing, our unwavering devotion to our inner guru gets transferred to our unwavering devotion to the guru in a person. But really, a guru in a person is your best friend who is constantly reminding you of your inner guru, who is constantly encouraging you towards winning propositions. This is the role of the guru in a person. So Aghor Yoga Path is a guru-based tradition. We are truly devoted to the guru within, to our own higher self. How to stay connected with your wholeness, with your Aghor self. You are given a mantra. You are initiated with a personal mantra. That mantra has been practiced by all the enlightened beings in the tradition who have walked on that path, who have reached the goal of Aghor. That mantra in itself has that power. As you resonate your inner universe with those sounds, you become like a magnet. Your body is the yantra, and while sitting in this yantra, you resonate this yantra with the mantra. Your body becomes like a magnet. It begins to draw from the environment the strength that allows you to walk on the path. That's the practice. And that is not sufficient. Together with that, the Guru gives you shiksha. Shiksha is teaching. What is the teaching? You are whole. You are complete. Here is a path. Now, you must have heard or read during Navaratri the prayers that we do. Ya Devi Sarva Bhuteshu Shanti Rupena Sansthita Namastasyai 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 Namo Nama. It's a tantric praise to the divine that acknowledges various tendencies of human being as a presence of divine within. I bow to that goddess who resides in each heart in the form of peace. I bow to the goddess that resides in each heart in the form of contentment. I bow to the goddess that resides in each heart in the form of forgiveness. I bow to the goddess that resides in each heart in the form of hunger. You may think of hunger as a negative tendency, but you have to have hunger for something to aspire for it. You have to have hunger for knowledge. So you go and you're hungry, you make effort, then you find food. Ya Devi Sarva Bhuteshu Tripti Rupena Sansthita. I bow to that goddess residing in each heart in the form of contentment. I bow to the goddess that resides in each heart in the form of Shanti. What is Shanti? Shanti is our ability to expand our heart to accommodate the one who is being a source of discomfort to me. You're feeling discomfort. Immediate reaction is your heart is closed. If you remember the Guru, my higher self, I'm capable of being bigger. You expand your heart. Allow that person, that situation to come in your heart. It expands. Ya Devi Sarva Bhuteshu Chaya Rupena Sansthita. Chaya. Shade. This is a beautiful, this is my favorite thing in Devi Suktam. That each creature, everything of the creation has shade. It provides shade to something, be it a blade of grass or a banyan tree. Under a banyan tree, an elephant can find shade. Under the blade of grass, an ant can find shade from the heat of the sun. So we all, as an individual, are capable, not only capable, we are providing shade to someone. Just your mere presence gives someone that comfort. Just thinking about you, that you are there, brings some joy in their heart. You are somebody's daughter, you are somebody's son, you are somebody's mother, you are somebody's friend, you are somebody's brother, sister. No matter what your worldly relation may look like, but that person, just knowing that you are there in their life, gives them some kind of feeling in their heart. That's your gift to them. You don't have to do anything. Even if your relationship is a little strained, but still, you are in their life. And your presence is giving them that shade, that chaya. And this is very important for us to remember, that we are all bringing joy, comfort in someone's life. We are important. Our life has a value. If we are not aware of the chaya, the Divine Mother residing within us in the form of chaya, we end up criticizing ourselves and feeling bad and give ourselves a hard time. But we must find some time to acknowledge that we do matter. We do matter. And when we give ourselves that permission, that recognition, we are acknowledging our aghor self. You don't have to be constantly doing good. Take a step back, take a nice deep breath, and just know it, that just because you are bringing solace, comfort, joy in someone's heart. No matter where you are, when you take a step back, take a moment to acknowledge your wholeness. You are practicing aghor. So that's the shiksha, that through various finding various attributes in our life, acknowledging it, owning it. When I'm able to love someone unconditionally, I am not doing them a favor, I'm acknowledging my own wholeness. When I'm able to forgive someone, I'm not doing them a favor, I am acknowledging my own divinity. I'm acknowledging my own wholeness. When I'm able to accept someone for who they are, I'm acknowledging my own wholeness. This is the practice. This is the shiksha. This is the teaching. We don't have to go to a pilgrimage to acknowledge our wholeness. We don't have to do any mysterious practice to acknowledge our wholeness. It's all here. Every day, every moment provides us that opportunity to practice Aghor. The very meaning of the word Aghor is it's sahaj. It's our, we are born with this. It's inborn. Saral, it's easy to comprehend. Sugam, it's easy to walk on. Provided I'm devoted to the Guru. Provided I'm devoted to my higher self. My devotion is unwavering. See, during Navratri, on the altar we offer Bermuda grass. Why? May my devotion be as tenacious as the Bermuda grass. It dries out. You see the little dried root of Bermuda grass, but a little water it finds, it sprouts again. Sometimes our devotion dries out because we have certain expectations from God, and if it doesn't come our way, then it's useless. Or we may have certain expectation of our own self. If we are not able to live to that, then we get harsh on ourselves, get harsh with ourselves. But our devotion to that, our own higher self, should be as tenacious as Bermuda grass. That whenever I'm able to recognize my divinity, it sprouts back. And that opportunity is provided to us daily in every different situation. Anyway, I just wanted to remind you and refresh you about the Aghor, what really Aghor means to me. I'd love to hear, what did you hear? Did it make any sense?
Babaji, I have a question. How can, if I'm practicing on a core yoga path, you spoke a lot about how it can help me personally, but what difference can I make in the world or in the community or if I'm a practicer?
Today I just spoke about all the practices that connect you with your wholeness. And when you are whole, when you are full, the natural thing is it overflows. And that overflow becomes seva, selfless service. So first, be devoted to your wholeness. That becomes your natural tendency. It's not that you have to do something. You have to prove it to yourself or to somebody else. When you are full, it overflows. So basically, looking at it, sadhana, that which we do to connect with our wholeness, and seva, selfless service. These two become the two sides of the same coin. Coin that our life is, sadhana, to stay connected with my wholeness, and seva is the overflow. So you naturally do it. The more you stay connected with your wholeness, you keep overflowing. Your life becomes a life of service. No matter where you go, no matter what you do, it's saturated with that. You're feeling good about yourself, you go out and you just smile at somebody who may be a little frowning. That becomes a seva right in that moment. That may change that person's day after seeing your smile. You're feeling good, repeating your mantra, or just thinking about how grateful you are for all the blessings in your life. Somebody driving by next to you and you look at him and just smile. You never know. That smile can touch that person and that changes their day. If you are feeling good about yourself, automatically you are going to make a difference in the world. Has anybody experienced that, or is it just a concept that Babaji is saying?
Well, I have a thought. This is a very pleasant container here. And people come here wishing there to be in their wholeness as best as they can. But out there, it's not always the case. And are you suggesting that some of the human emotions like anger and frustration are not appropriate?
Oh, no. Ya Devi Sarva Bhuteshu. There is a prayer that Divine Mother residing in each heart in the form of irritation, I bow to you, I bow to you, I bow to you. We do become irritated sometimes. That's also divinity in the form of, I'm forgetting the Sanskrit name. Bhranti is confusion. Even confusion is a form of divine residing in us. We acknowledge it in the moment, but then again we take a step back and say, oh Mother, oh Divine Mother, please save me from your effect. So those things will happen once we go out in the world. It will happen. It will happen. But then we have to stop, take a step back, take a deep breath, and try to go in the lap of the Divine Mother in a different form that can bring some joy to others. Was that an answer to your question, Daphne?
Well, yes. It's impossible to turn the other cheek.
At the time. Yes. But our practice, remember, our practice is stop. Take a step back. Take a nice deep breath. And remember the Guru. Remember your own higher self. Sometimes we flow and we get further in the deep waters. But as long as we come back, as long as we come back home by the evening, we are not listed as a missing person.
Well, would you, because I think many of us perceive the world as in not the greatest state right now, maybe you could answer Shivani's question on a broader scale. That is, does, and I know the answer is yes, but maybe you could just elaborate more on it. Does the collective consciousness of those of us who are trying to live this life make a difference in the world?
It definitely makes a difference. It definitely makes a difference, and this is our responsibility. If we consider ourselves conscious human beings, if we are aspiring to see a better world. This is our responsibility. As Daphne said, that it's hard, but it's not impossible. And the conscious human beings have to make effort, have to be dedicated to that guru, have to be dedicated to a better world. And this becomes our responsibility, that the vibrations coming out of my being are not adding to that collective confusion. Constantly our body is putting out vibrations. No matter where we are happy, happy vibrations are coming out. If we are afraid, vibrations of fear are coming out. Constantly, doesn't matter what state of mind we are in, we are putting out that kind of vibration. And if I become a responsible human being, then I become responsible for what kind of vibration am I putting out. As we sit together as a group here, thinking about the higher consciousness, the vibrations coming out of our being in that moment are affecting the world in a very concrete way. So the more we make an effort as an individual and as a group to put out the vibrations of higher nature, we are affecting the world. And in order to do that, we have to sometimes sacrifice something. Sacrifice our own ego, sacrifice maybe even my own way of seeing things. If my way of seeing things are causing conflict, friction, irritation, I have to stop and look at it. And that makes me a responsible human being.
I have a question about forgiving yourself when you do something or hurt somebody, whether it's willingly or not. That seems to be harder in some ways than forgiving yourself.
You have to be kind to yourself and acknowledge being human. Yes, I hurt somebody or I did something to somebody when I was not in my wholeness. But now I'm making an effort, an attempt to be whole. You have to forgive yourself. Otherwise, you'll keep laying down on the floor with your nose down. You have to stand up. And next time, make a little more effort not to repeat the same thing. I don't think there is another option. The one who hurt somebody or who did something to someone else, that happened in a time and space. You are not there now, so why to keep holding yourself there?
How should we relate to politics, Father? We're constantly being asked to feel this way, move in this direction, come here, feel this, be part of this. Constantly has to do that. And in our culture, in our country, we have a responsibility to make a choice, to listen to it enough to be able to make an intelligent vote. How should we relate to those things?
The first politics that we should relate to is our own inner politics, being able to talk to ourselves, making sure that I'm not coming from a place of reaction. Once I do whatever is necessary to stay in my wholeness, when I'm established in myself, then I'm able to hear something and make a right decision. Somebody has to be there to hear, to listen. And the practice that we do, the meditation that we do, it's all preparing for someone to be there to listen, to understand, and then to make a conscious decision. When we are not established in that, then we are ready to jump on any bandwagon that comes along. If I'm devoted to a conscious, healthy world, first I have to make myself conscious and healthy, and then I'm able to join the politics. We can work on world peace, but the first we have to work on our own peace. Then whatever actions we do helps the world peace.
Babaji, you speak about the core state of being as one that is natural or inborn. Then why sometimes it feels so difficult?
Because of the company we keep. We are affected by the company we keep. We are affected by what we hear, what we see, what we entertain most of the day. So you are sitting very peacefully and somebody comes with some charge and you begin to listen to that, and all of a sudden your mind is moved in a different direction. And this is why the satsang is so important for the for any aspirant. Satsang means choosing the company you keep. You're listening to somebody and after listening, stop and see what kind of effect that conversation has made on you. Is it serving your higher self or it's taking you away from there? I always do that. That's actually very important practice in my life. I talk to people from all kinds of ideas, concepts, this, that. But then I stop and look at it that this company that I have just kept, has it served my higher self or it has taken me in another direction? So the company you keep is very important. And the measurement is, has this gift helped me to go higher or it has taken me lower? That's the parameter I compare it on.
You also speak about the company of thoughts?
Sure. And those are affected by company we keep.
Can you tell us about non-discrimination versus discrimination in Aghor?
When you are established in Aghor, non-discrimination becomes your first nature. You are whole. You are complete. And when you are established in that wholeness, it's easier to see everything in harmony. It's only when you are feeling something lacking inside, when you feel separated, then you get into judgment, then you get into discrimination. So whenever you are passing a judgment about anything, a little deep bell is already ringing inside you. So that's the very basic foundation of Aghor state of being, to be in a state of non-discrimination. It's not easy. You can't be in that state all the time, but eventually that's the state where enlightened beings are, who are established in Aghor all the time.